Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the topic of Are Sin, Disease, and Death Real? We're so very grateful you could join us today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we welcome you all. We will start today with the morning prayer.
I'm reading from pages 101 and 160, Divinity Course and General Collectan. Call to the correct view of man that heals. We adulterate the truth when we have a false sense of God and man. We have idols when we hold in thought the beliefs of sin, sickness, and death, and believe them to be real. We break the law when we believe that evil is as real as good, for this is a false sense which sees only the inverted image and not the true idea of God. Hence, it prevents us from reflecting the healing truth, having but one God and loving our neighbor as ourselves. My beloved students, enter into the closet of divine love, and there in humility, ask this ever-present power to shield and to defend you from the enemies of your souls and bodies, to defend you and guard you and guide you in the path of righteousness, pleasantness, and truth.
Beautiful, thank you. Goes right along with what we're going to talk about. Thank you, Florence. Okay, Karen.
Watch number 312. Watch lest you continue to try to reflect God as a means to an end, that end being health. The time comes when God expects you to use discord to help you to find him. When one seeks help through Christian Science and fails to receive it, he gives himself away. If he declares that he had treatment for a month, for instance, and received no benefit, such a one means that he did not receive help, and he is then apt to toy with the notion of returning to medical methods. He exposes the fact that all he wants from God is pleasant matter, without regard for spiritualization. When one regards sickness as the means to the end of finding God, any clearer thought of him or more trustful sense attained makes him grateful, even if he does not gain the harmony in the flesh at once.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
Well, I pretty much said it in my testimony on Wednesday night, but it's coming here that this is all about what's happened to me. I was using Christian Science to feel better if there was a problem or to heal my children or what. And it's all about spiritualization and finding your oneness with God. And that's why I was fearful. And because I didn't have that element in my prayer about it. It was all about healing the body. So now I do it. I mean, my thought is completely different about what I'm doing when I'm praying. Very grateful for that.
Thank you. Yeah, that expression, using Christian Science, it says so much. You know, you hear it a lot. I'm going to use Christian Science. Really? How do you use Christian Science? But that's what we all would say. You know, I'm going to use it for this. I'm going to use it for that. Like it's some kind of a cooking utensil. So
I think Paul comes to my thought that no matter, you know, what he was going through, it's not clear what the infirmity was, but look what he did, you know, just not thinking about whatever was going on, but just did the work of God, and I'm sure his thought was immensely spiritualized.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely.
It just goes to show Christian Science can't be manipulated. After all, it's all God's doing. Who's going to manipulate him? And all too often, people look for some kind of a sign to see if they're on the right track according to the rewards they're getting. And, you know, that might work for a while, but the time comes when just our affection for the unseen things, affection for spiritual sense, just to be contented to know that you're obeying God with all your heart, and that alone is all you need. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. What if Mrs. Eddy had thought, you know, or had used that, like having problems or not having problems, as a guidepost for whether or not she was on the right track? You know, even if she was establishing the church, I mean, there was always something coming at her. But it just occurred to me reading this watch, it's like, you know, kind of a wrong sense of what we're trying to do or what we need. You know, it's not. I don't just need health. What I need is to be close to God. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not feeling well, then there's probably something in my thought that needs weeding out.
Thank you.
And we've learned that from her history, her biographies, and that's true. Looked at it just from the worldly point of view, there was something always after her. But she persisted. She was the faithful servant. And because of her faithfulness, we have Christian Science.
Right.
That's why we have testimony healings or testimony meetings. You know, we have the testimonies of healing. We don't have the testimonies of how great we're doing.
Yeah. And you can also say that about Christ Jesus, too. He certainly had things coming after him all the time. So it's not kind of an indication on whether you're a good scientist or not, because you have a nice pleasant house and all your children are lined up in a row doing just what you would have them do. That usually is what puts people soundly to sleep, or they're not even aware of the problems they do have because they're sleeping. So we have been taught here that first, seek the kingdom of heaven, God, and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. It's a major rule and principle. The healing, for one thing, your health is in God. It's not in your body. So nothing has ever interfered with it or taken it from you or in any way disturbed it. It's perfect in God, and you, as his image and likeness, are perfect as well. So it's a matter of seeing and acknowledging that, but it definitely is a byproduct of seeking him first. Yeah. And someone asked me this week, well, does that mean I shouldn't be seeking health? It means?
Seek God and you find the health, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, our textbook is called Science and Health, so obviously health is important.
Thank you very much.
And I think about that, you know, we talk about living the science, but I feel we're also supposed to live this health.
So. Yes, we are. Yes, health is very normal and natural, and we all should have it. We all need it. And Victor Young says that in an article today, I think. So, and certainly people first come to science very often, not always, but seeking health. So it's not a wrong thing. But especially after a while, after you've been here a while and you're still just wanting to be here for the loaves and fishes, then that's not good. Then you have not grown. You're not the good soil. And you're going to have to learn to put all of that aside and seek him for that very sake. Just as it says, just to get to know him better. That's the real reward. That's more important than anything.
Right.
Go ahead.
I just want to add to what was said about the title of the book. To me, after many decades of being so blessed with the science of the Christ, I call it, if you have the science, you have the help. And sometimes I share that as another way to call this amazing book.
Thank you. Yes. So, good watching point. Thank you, Karen. They're all good, and it's so good to be thinking about them deeply. As I said, we here in this church, Mrs. Evans, we had a special phone number that we would call, and she would put messages on it. Usually it was a watching point. She'd change it every few days. And we became very, very familiar with 500 Watching Points by Gilbert Carpenter. I remember when we first got it, I could not put it down. Yeah. It's just so incredible. And that was after spending 1 year in Mrs. Eddy's home. What he gathered from that is so wonderful. I'm so grateful. And what she gave us, her books, Science and Health and Prose Works, are enough. But these are her disciples, and they're speaking about living in her home or being taught by her. And what they have to say is extremely helpful. And Gilbert Carpenter says that, too. He talks about the Bible, Mrs. Eddy's works. And then he says, and then to see her example, how she lived it. And that's books particularly do. How did she live it? How did she live it in her home? So we can live it in that way as well.
All right. I want to, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I want to give thanks for all the work that you guys did for putting those 500 points on the website, but not only just the text, but to have it recorded. I mean, thank you so much. That is so wonderful. And again, I also bring that line so great that kept me in science the first years. You have it as you live it, because you were just talking about it.
Yes, yes. You have it as you live it. It's not the words, it's the living it. All right, I think today I want to start. Nancy found some beautiful things from Mrs. Eddy on this topic, are sin, disease, and death real? You know, we have this subject twice a year and we all talk about it, and we all know that, oh no, they're not real, but we need to prove it. As Ingrid just said, we have to live this. And so we'll get a little more into how to really apply this truth to our lives, not just words, but know that sin, disease, and death are not real. Okay, go ahead, Nancy.
Okay, in Prose Works from Know and Yes, the unreality of sin, disease, and death rests on the exclusive truth that being, to be eternal, must be harmonious. And then the rest is found in Unity of Good. What is the cardinal point of the difference in my metaphysical system? This, that by knowing the unreality of disease, sin, and death, you demonstrate the allness of God. This difference wholly separates my system from all others. The reality of these so-called existences I deny, because they are not to be found in God, and this system is built on Him as the sole cause. Jesus came to rescue men from these very illusions to which He seemed to conform, from the illusion which calls sin real and man a sinner needing a Savior, the illusion which calls sickness real and man an invalid needing a physician, the illusion that death is as real as life. From such thoughts, mortal inventions one and all, Christ Jesus came to save men through ever-present and eternal good. Mortal man is a kingdom divided against itself. With the same breath, he articulates truth and error. We say that God is all, and there is none beside Him, and then talk of sin and sinners as real. We call God omnipotent and omnipresent, and then conjure up from the dark abyss of nothingness a powerful presence named evil. We say that harmony is real, and inharmony is its opposite, and therefore unreal. Yet we descant upon sickness, sin, and death as realities. With the tongue bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, who are made after his similitude, human concept of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. And that's from James 3. Mortals are free, moral agents, to choose whom they would serve. If God, then let them serve him, and he will be unto them all in all. And that's the whole thing, the allness of God.
It's just
why I chose those things.
Thank you. Yes. Hardly need to go any farther. That's so beautiful. And Mrs. Eddy, what did she call Unity of Good? Her masterpiece or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She explains this like you would a mathematical problem, mm-hmm. not a
equation.
Yeah. You know, how it logically, she follows logically everything. So if you were going to say God is all, that means that this is not the truth. It is illusion, sin, disease, and death. And she does it so perfectly. So, mm-hmm. yes, logically.
And like mathematics, it's an exact science.
Yes.
It's not subject to material laws, which are always variable and not certain. It's an exact science.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's called a proof.
Proof. Well, so here again, in finding how to really know that when you're confronted with sin, disease, or death, it's logically impossible. You can stand with it as you would a math problem, as you would stand to 2 + 2 = 4, and knowing that 2 + 2 = 5. It's just all this hullabaloo that has gone on for years to make us think otherwise. Since 200 years after Christ Jesus, when they began with the Materia Medica and all the other things, and just this belief of life in matter. We certainly saw it with that wonderful Bible study with the Tower of Babel, you know, man being the creator and being so proud of himself, as we see it all falling flat on its face. So thank you, Nancy. That was just wonderful. And I know we had that in the Wednesday night meeting, that one in the, I forget. Yeah,
2 weeks ago.
And was it you, Florence? Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, yeah.
2 weeks ago, yeah, because that really caught my attention. We call God omnipotent and omnipresent, and then conjure up from the dark abyss of nothingness a powerful presence named evil. I mean, that's exactly what we do. Yeah. And that's why just saying the words is helpful. It's like tuning your violin, but you don't leave it there. If you don't feel it, because we all know, and Florence and I know in the practice, people who say, I know this and I know that, and they quote, but they don't really know it. If you don't feel it, and we're going to talk more about how we get there as well, so that we're feeling this, not only is it factual, true, and logical, it touches our whole being, including our heart, everything about us. So we feel his presence and power, and we feel and know that there's no other power other than him.
Yeah, that's that divine reason. I obviously none of us can state it as well as she has, but it's literally the rock. It's the foundation, I feel, that you can establish for yourself the truth. And I go back to Eustace a lot, but he's like, you cannot blindly accept that Christian Science is true because of all the healings, because of what Mrs. Eddy has said, because of the textbook. You have to prove it to yourself. And what she lays out right there is this beautiful reason. And that's like the most, doesn't she say that's like the most powerful? What is she? I don't know the quote. Reason is
most active.
Yes. And
yeah, reason is one of the most active.
Yeah, powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
It lights a fire. It lights a fire in me. No matter what situation I'm in, it's that divine reason and logic that that would be my own personal testimony, is that that literally is what grounds me on the rock.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. These are all facts, indisputable. It is the rock that is higher than I, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. This rock we can cling to. The storms may roar without. My heart may low be laid, but God is round about me. Can I be dismayed? So, yeah, and we have had the storms, haven't we? That's why, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a beautiful letter. I didn't bring it tonight, in email from, I don't usually like to use names, but she's the one that took over Helen Wright's independent web, the one that was in Florida. We heard it read on Wednesday night. The whole family was in Florida, not the whole family, but most of the family, right where the storm was hitting. Mm-hmm. And as we stood, and I could feel it, and I'm so grateful again for Lenny's readings, which was a perfect treatment, mm-hmm. because the storm was hitting landfall at 8:30. You could feel the power of this truth. And she said that nothing happened where they were, and she was right there. So another
thing. Mary, I'm here now, and I'm at the airport, so I've been on mute, but you're mm-hmm. bringing tears to my eyes, because it was the most amazing experience of protection and guidance, and all of it was there. So just so thankful.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah.
Well, I was so grateful. And if it's with your mother's permission, I will read the letter at some point,
sure.
either next week.
Yes.
She gives a bit of history, too, about that website.
Yes.
So
yes.
Anyway, yes, I'm so grateful. And she had another, she was involved in another storm in which she was totally protected, maybe even worse. I don't know. But
she's actually never left Florida during, I think, I don't know how many, 50 years of storm predictions, and maybe only once has ever seemingly lost her electricity during all that, and just really awesome.
Awesome.
And I wasn't supposed to be there, actually. I didn't know that, you know, they were predicting a storm until after I was there already, and so I wasn't going to go anywhere, but so that was really my first experience with anything like that, and keeping your head above all of the dire, you know, warnings and predictions, and, you know, her phone is ringing every 5 minutes to say, get out of here, leave, and, you know, it was really, really an awesome experience, quite amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you all. I know all of you, so many of you, and certainly the weather committee was praying. The weather committee's gotten on it. We've got quite a weather committee now. It's getting a wonderful reputation, and well it should, because it's a power of God. It is not, as I read on Wednesday, it's not, Christian Scientists do not control the weather. God controls the weather. And knowing that, we are safe from what would appear sometimes to be mortal mind, upset, unrest, whatever else, malicious intent, trying to control the weather. No, thank you. We're not having it. We know something you don't know, evidently. And we have the Trump card that trumps all the other cards. So, because it's from God Almighty. So thank you, Elizabeth. I'm glad you were here.
Thank you all. Thank you all. Yeah, that Wednesday night meeting was just amazing for my whole family to, you know, to think about that weather committee and think about that power of God, and just really all of it was incredible. So thank you.
Yes. Yes, it was. And also, you know, this shows for the readers, those who write the lessons, you know, Lenny, when she was writing the lesson, I mean, she knew the storms were brewing and everything, but she didn't know the timing, I'm sure.
That lesson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
And those of you who write the lessons, the weekly lessons, very often it's just what you need for that week. It's what's going on in your life and in the lives of others. So this is the prayer that goes on before our writers work. They pray, what is the need, Father? And Father, the Father tells us, even in advance, what is needed. So this is how we demonstrate how we live, Ingrid, live this science. It's not in the sky, it's living it. And if we don't live it, we trip up and we fall on our face and we find out, whoops, I wasn't living. I have.
And then we use that discord to find God.
We use that discord to find God, and we're stronger than before the fall. That's how it works. All right, Chardell, you can just briefly, not maybe read the whole thing, but tell us about your submission.
Yeah, I'd like to read what's in the lesson. The so-called law of mortal mind, conjectural, speculative, is made void by the law of immortal mind, and false law should be trampled underfoot. That was very well said. And then Edward Kimball wrote a letter on body, but he had been directed by Mrs. Eddy, who had been attacked about herself. And then she gave this to him and taught him, and he was to memorize it, and then somebody else delivered it. But it goes a little bit like this. One guide, one mind, one Christ, hence one man and one body. It is but one body. And then he goes on and explains, man and his body are idea of mind, ideas of mind, God's idea, and are perfect. And then let's see, no mortal law can interfere or disturb the harmonious action or function of any organ of man. All the things of body are eternal, complete, perfect, and perpetually active as ideas. The law of mind to body is the law of perpetual harmonious action. Body will always be body, and then error can do nothing to it. God is all there is to us.
Thank you. Yes. So this is another way, you know, knowing this fact, if you will, another fact about yourself, about your body. There's one body, one heart, only one organ, and it's of God, the infinite heart of mind, or whatever problem you might seem to have. You bring it back to what is the truth. And if God doesn't have that problem, as Lillian likes to say, if God doesn't have it, then you can't have it either. It's a possibility. So, again, proving the unreality of sin, disease, and death by knowing who and what you are, having the right concept of your body, and all seeming material things. So as we talked about last week, it's scientific translations. It's all spirit. There's not two of you. There's only one of you. It is spiritual and it is perfect now. And this false sense of body, this false sense of materiality, that it just drops away under the light of truth. It will and does and is. We see through a glass darkly. Okay, Jeremy, the golden text.
Isaiah, look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is none else.
Thank you. And Karen sent me so many beautiful things just on the golden text. It's hard to get beyond that. But I feel that it goes well with, I said Karen did, but also Carrie. I'm not sure who I said. Carrie sent me articles. Karen be something she'll share in a minute. But in Science and Health, when the illusion of sickness or sin tempts you, cling steadfastly to God and his idea. Allow nothing but his likeness to abide in your thought. Let neither fear nor doubt overshadow your clear sense and calm trust that the recognition of life harmonious as life eternally is can destroy any painful sense of or belief in that which life is not. Let Christian Science instead of corporeal sense support your understanding of being, and this understanding will supplant error with truth, replace mortality with immortality, and silence discord with harmony. This is what happens when you look unto me, when you look unto God, and know I am God and there is none else. We go back to the allness of God. There is none else. All right, Karen.
Well, I went to Gill's exposition of the entire Bible, and he says, look unto me, and not to idols, nor to any creature, nor to the works of your hands, to your own righteousness and doings, to your wounds, to your tears and humiliations, to your own hearts and frames, to your graces and the exercise of them. All must be looked off of, and Christ only looked unto by a direct act of faith, for righteousness, for pardon, for all supplies of grace, and for glory and eternal happiness. He is to be looked unto as the Son of God, whose glory is the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth, as the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, as the only mediator between God and man, as the Savior and Redeemer of lost sinners, and considered in all his offices and relations. And then, and be ye saved, or ye shall be saved. Christ is set up in the gospel and the ministration of it to be looked at, that men may be saved by him. And it is the will of God, not only that men should look to him, but that whosoever sees him and believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. The ministers of the gospel are appointed to show men the way of salvation by Christ, and to assure them that he that believes in him shall be saved. And saints in all ages have looked unto him and have been saved by him. And therefore, this may be taken for a sure and certain thing, that such that look to Christ, as the Israelites did to the brazen serpent, the type of him, shall be saved. For I am God, and there is none else. And so mighty to save, able to save to the uttermost, all that come to him.
Thank you. So there we are. You know, any problem you're having, whether it's lack, physical problem, emotional problem, whatever you're having, remember it is a mesmerism. It wants to mesmerize you. And guess what? If you look at God, you're not going to be mesmerized. Mm-hmm. So that's why this is such a precious thought. Look at God. Count your blessings. Think about what God is, who he is. Study. Get your thoughts. Sing hymns. Get your thought off the illusion that it can be screaming at you with pain or whatever else, or a time limit. Like if this doesn't happen at a certain time, all hell will break loose. Well, the hell you say. This is all about your oneness with the Father. Don't be mesmerized. It's hypnotic. Remember that story of the snake where some man was out in the field and someone was observing him, and there was a snake there, and pretty soon the man's head was waving back and forth, and he was totally hypnotized. Remember the Walt Disney movie, The Jungle Book, and there was that snake that would wave his head around and try to get the little fellow to be mesmerized by him. So that's how it works. And this is part of the storm business. Parthens wrote a wonderful article we have on the website about that. All the TV stuff, and as Elizabeth was saying, a phone call every 5 minutes, get the heck out of Dodge. We know they try to mesmerize you, frighten, whether it's malicious or ignorant or combination. I think it's a combination. I think some of it is malicious. Certainly, look at how they advertise the drugs. Oh, my goodness. And even when you turn the sound off, if you look at it, people look like they're stumbling all around, having a terrible time. They're trying to sell that product to you to get you so upset and so disturbed. And it's better to laugh at it than cry at it, because it is absurd what they try to do. So Era does not like to be laughed at. And it's a bogus lie, all of it. So don't watch it. Don't take it in. And if it's trying you, look unto me and be ye saved.
This is why I think Mrs. Eddy's example, she tells us what she did to wake up every morning and to declare that God is my mind, God is the only mind, and throughout the day, too, she did. It's powerful, because this mind is the only mind there is, really, and it's a mind that cannot be
Thank you.
Mesmerized.
And you know, that's what we went over last week. This is why we do what we do. Because it keeps us exempt from the mesmeric beliefs. All of mortal existence is a mesmeric belief. So we think of these things in the morning and we stay with them all day. I had asked Jeremy to research the idea of Orientalism. It was mentioned several times in the article Electricity by Bicknell Young. Now, when we talk about these things, these are impersonal things. It has nothing to do with people. It might have something to do with systems, religions, and cultures, but not people. But anyway, this idea of it's basically malicious animal magnetism. It goes by many different names, including witchcraft. He found a lot of really interesting I guess they're articles or excerpts from articles on it.
Yeah, different things from the early workers, and I think it's Paul Smiley. And,
a lot of from Paul Smiley.
Early sentinels and journals.
And it takes it up because there is a belief that, there's something out there. I mean, you could call it voodoo. Let's call it voodoo, because that's pretty much what it is, where they're projecting something to harm you in some way. But when you're knowing your oneness with the Father and that you only have one mind and all the things we know every day, you're totally exempt from it. Also, when you're not indulging in hate, lust, revenge, jealousy, all the carnal things, you're not there. There's no way it can reach you. So you have total protection. It's nothing to fear. We do need to be aware of it, but not superstitiously like so many Christian Scientists are. So-and-so did this, and this is what happened. And no, don't give it a power it does not have. Handle it means to strip it of power, not to get all foofed up or think it ever did anything, because it's impossible. No mortal mind has the right to destroy.
Creator destroy.
Anyway, mm-hmm. Mortal mind can do nothing. If it seems to, it is the Adam dream. It is only in belief. So.
And if we say that we're in Christian Science, but what we end up doing is exactly what we would have done before Christian Science, then what good was it?
Yes. Yes. And so many religions are so superstitious. I hear it. You know, that they believe in voodoo, or they believe that it has power. It has no power. Era comes to you for life and you give it all the life it has. But in working the way we do, we exempt ourselves from these beliefs, including sin, disease, and death. It's why we do what we do. It's very important. Not superstitiously, but because we love God and we want to be at one with Him. And this is an article, short article that Carrie sent. What is What is it that has been hidden from the ages? Queried Reverend E. Morgan. Isaac. Man's oneness with God was his answer. Look unto me and live. This is the one thing, and it is surely coming. The kingdom of heaven, as Jesus said, is within you, and no one has power over you. What is faith? Understanding. And what is understanding? Your oneness with God. Herein lies the healing power. When you are declaring, I and my Father are one, the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works, and the Father hath not left me alone. You are declaring your oneness with the Father, and you are exempt from the false beliefs of sin, disease, and death. They cannot reach you. They cannot touch you. They are powerless. Why are they powerless?
They're not of God.
All power belongs to God.
That's it. They're not of God. Look at them. It's silly little moths. Mrs. Eddy says, what's moths? It singed their wings. And they're just nothings. Nothing. Don't make them something. But you do it with the authority of Christ, not by ignoring it, not by fearing it, but handling it. And then there is this wonderful article Carrie sent, The Bended Knee by Ella Hoag. And, whoops, I'll read a little bit of it, but there's perhaps no fact more plainly set forth from Genesis to Revelation than the inevitable nature of the demand that all must finally bow to God, that all must finally acknowledge him as infinite. All. Indeed, again and again, we find God insisting therein on his own completeness, as for instance, this time also in Isaiah. Look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is none else. And then that the leader of Christian Science Movement saw it fit to unite it with the communion services of the Christian Science Church certainly evidences that it has a place today in a correct worship of God, and it is our duty so to understand its purpose, that its use will bring to all attendants upon Christian Science services the beneficial result Mrs. Eddy intended. Our communion service, we were all invited to what?
Kneel.
I love where Charles Stanley always says, you stand the tallest on your knees. And it goes on, the Christian Scientist approaches the consideration of every subject from the standpoint of its essentially mental nature, and the subject of the bended knee in its every aspect is quite as clearly mental as any other. Now, humility is not a natural trait of the human consciousness. Indeed, the very arrogance of the suppositional belief of an existence in matter uncovers instantly a sense of resistance to whatever asks of it any admission of the need of its subserviency in any direction. The so-called mortal mind always questions its need of bowing to anything or anyone. Instead, it is ever quite ready to argue for its own dignity when it claims should never be called upon to bend even to God. The Tower of Babel. When we pause to realize that every supposititious claim of material selfhood is an egotistical, outrageous denial of God's all power and all presence, that every belief in materiality is a belief of another power and presence than divine, we begin to wonder if we should ever for an instant lose sight of the necessity of mentally bending the knee to our good God. Indeed, there is no question that the duty of mortals is ever to maintain that true sense of humility. And she talks about how it's being a great and holy privilege. So,
will that article be placed on our website?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
So And I have told the story when I really, you know, I did not feel any connection to God, to the Father. I don't know why. It was just words to me. Couldn't get it for some reason. Tried as I might. One of the main things that helped me was when I would be out during the day or any time to see God's presence and power, all the ways he was with me, you know, just going to the grocery store, any simple thing, you know, the proverbial finding a parking lot, but all these ways I began to see God, a beautiful flower, a smile, these little things that I take for granted, just rush through my day, not acknowledging his presence and power. Then when I got home or got in a quiet spot, I would lie down prostrate on the floor. It helped me cement my total nothingness without God, my total gratitude for all that he had done and all that I had not even noticed all practically my whole life. And it changed my life. It truly did. And I that was symbolic. You don't necessarily have to lie on the floor or get on your knees, but I wanted to take that moment and acknowledge his presence and power and ask his forgiveness for not realizing how much he's been with me. You know, we're so focused on what's wrong that we don't see what's right half the time. That's why look unto me. Look unto me. So important all during our day to look unto God. And then, you know, it's so easy in miscellaneous writings, prose works, Mrs. Eddy talking about. We turn with sick incense from a pagan Jew's or Muslim's conception of deity for peace and find rest in the spiritual ideal of good of Christ. For who is so great as a God is our God, unchangeable, all wise, all just, all merciful, ever loving, ever living life, truth, love, comforting such as mourn, opening the prison doors to the captive, marking the unwinged bird, pitying with more than a father's pity, healing the sick, cleansing the leper, raising the dead, saving sinners. As we think thereon, man's true sense is filled with peace and power. And we say it is well that Christian Science has taken expressive silence wherein to muse his praise, to kiss the feet of Jesus, adore the white Christ, and stretch out our arms to God. And then in the new birth, you know, you're all familiar with that. I won't read the whole thing, but before the flames have died away on this Mount of Revelation, like the patriarch of old, you take off your shoes, lay aside your material appendages, human opinions and doctrines, give up your more material religion with its rites and ceremonies, put off your materia medica, and hygiene is worse than useless. To what?
At the feet of God.
To sit at the feet of Jesus. There are many, I marked many things in prose works. We won't have time for all of it, but to sit at the feet of Jesus in great humility, put away all your beliefs, whatever it was you thought. We had a couple, we think maybe they were Mormons that came to church on Wednesday, and you know, they hardly stayed at all because they had a vessel full. I mean, they weren't really opening their thought to anything, but unfortunately, because we could have at least told them about Bicknell Young being the nephew of Brigham Young. Mm-hmm. So anyway, remember this in humility, the importance of humility, and that's what the bended knee stands for, humility. For the nothingness of sin, disease, and death, you've got to put away all your past beliefs, worries, concerns, all your past, and sit at the feet of Jesus. It's powerful. Now we're going to end with this very, it's a conversion of Charles Spurgeon. Those of you, we've watched it here on a Prime gives his biography, but this tells how the story, how he was converted, and what did it was, look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
And we'll make time to read it. Go ahead.
Really? He writes, when for the first time I received the gospel to my soul's salvation, I thought that I had never really heard it before. And I began to think that the preacher whom I had listened had not truly preached it. But on looking back, I'm inclined to believe that I had heard the gospel fully preached many hundreds of times before, and that this was the difference, that I then heard it as though I heard it not. And when I did hear it, the message may not have been any more clear in itself than it had been at former times, but the power of the Holy Spirit was present to open my ear and to guide the message to my heart. I sometimes think I might have been in darkness and despair until now, had it not been for the goodness of God in sending a snowstorm one Sunday morning while I was going to a certain place of worship. When I could go no further, I turned down a side street. I came to a little primitive Methodist chapel. In that chapel, there may have been a dozen or 15 people. I had heard of the primitive Methodists, how they sang so loudly that they made people's heads ache. But that did not matter to me. I wanted to know how I might be saved, and if they could tell me that, I did not care how much they made my head ache. The minister did not come that morning. He was snowed up, I suppose. At last, a very thin-looking man, a shoemaker or tailor or something of that sort, went up into the pulpit to preach. Now, it is well that preachers should be instructed, but this man was really stupid. He was obliged to stick to his text for the simple reason that he had little else to say. The text was, look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth. Isaiah 45, verse 22. He did not even pronounce the words rightly. But that did not matter. There was, I thought, a glimpse of hope for me in that text. The preacher began thus. My dear friends, this is a very simple text indeed. It says, look. Now look and don't take a deal of pains. It ain't lifting your foot or your finger. It is just look. Well, a man needn't go to college to learn to look. You may be the biggest fool, and yet you can look. A man needn't be worth $1,000 a year to be able to look. Anyone can look. Even a child can look. But then the text says, look unto me. Aye, said he in broad Essex, many on ye are looking to yourselves. But it's no use looking there. You never find any comfort in yourselves. Some look to God the Father. No, look to him by and by. Jesus Christ says, look unto me. Some on ye say, we must wait for the Spirit's working. You have no business with that just now. Look to Christ. The text says, look unto me. Then the good man followed up his text in this way. Look unto me, I am sweating great drops of blood. Look unto me, I am hanging on the cross. Look unto me, I am dead and buried. Look unto me, I rise again. Look unto me, I ascend to heaven. Look unto me, I am sitting at the Father's right hand. O poor sinner, look unto me, look unto me. When he had gone to about that length and managed to spin out 10 minutes or so, he was at the end of his tether. Then he looked at me under the gallery, and I dare say with so few present, he knew me to be a stranger. Just fixing his eyes on me, as if he knew all my heart, he said, young man, you look very miserable. Well, I did. but I had not been accustomed to have remarks made from the pulpit on my personal appearance before. However, it was a good blow. Struck right home. He continued, "And you always will be miserable. Miserable in life and miserable in death, if you don't obey my text. But if you obey now, this moment, you will be saved." Then, lifting up his hands, he shouted, as only a primitive Methodist could do, "You, man, look to Jesus Christ. Look, look, look. You have nothing to do but to look and live." I saw at once the way of salvation. I know not else what else he said. I did not take much notice of it. I was so possessed with that one thought. Like as when a brazen serpent was lifted up, the people only looked and were healed. So it was with me. I had been waiting to do 50 things. But when I heard that word, look, what a charming word it seemed to me. Oh, I looked until I could almost have looked my eyes away. There and then the cloud was gone. The darkness had rolled away. And that moment I saw the sun. And I could have risen that instant and sung with the most enthusiastic of them of that precious blood of Christ and simple faith which looks alone to him. Oh, that somebody had told me this before. Trust Christ, and you shall be saved. It is not everyone who can remember the very day and hour of his deliverance. But as Richard Neal said, at such a time of the day, clang went every harp in heaven. For Richard Neal was born again. It was even so with me. The clock of mercy struck in heaven the hour and moment of my emancipation, for the time had come. Between 10:30, when I entered that chapel, and 12:30, when I was back again at home, what a change had taken place in me. I had passed from darkness into marvelous light, from death to life.
Charles Spurgeon. Look unto me.
Yes.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.